Now, from the left coast, another in-depth interview from Peter B. Collins. Peter B.'s been talking about news and politics since Watergate and generously shares his knowledge, wisdom, opinions, and outrage here because his friends and family can't take it anymore. Peter B.'s an independent progressive who upsets Democrats and Republicans as conditions require and is one of the few lefty pundits who predicted Trump would win. This podcast is funded entirely by listeners like you, and subscribers get first access to these in-depth interviews. When you're ready, go to peterbcollins.com/signup. Now, here's your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Today, we bring you news of the latest assault on the Fourth Amendment. Just a few days ago in my daily podcast, I reported the alarming news of the latest incursion into our Fourth Amendment rights. It's called the reverse search warrant. It was deployed in the Proud Boys case. Those are the right-wingers who got into a street fight with some Antifa members in Manhattan. And I want to credit Albert Fox Kahn, executive director of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project at the Urban Justice Center in New York. He has sounded the alarm on the abusive use of a reverse search warrant, and that's what we're talking about in today's in-depth interview podcast. This podcast made possible by listeners like you who support my work with your subscriptions. People like Ben Brotman, Patrick Gray, Carla Mahoney, she's been to Ephesus. That's an inside joke. And Edward Berwick just renewed his annual subscription. Thank you, Ed. I invite you to join their ranks. Visit peterbcollins.com. Click on menu, click on become a subscriber, you hit the sign up page, and boom, you can take it from there. Today on the Peter B. Collins podcast, we talk about a fresh incursion on our Fourth Amendment rights under the United States Constitution. In a legal form of dragnet surveillance that, in my view, parallels the technology of the Stingray surveillance system that we've talked about repeatedly on this podcast, we learn of this method that was used by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office in the recent case regarding a street fight that involved the right-wing Proud Boys and unknown members of an Antifa group. Joining me today to talk about the remarkable legal strategy that was used here that put thousands of people under a dragnet surveillance as potential suspects is Albert Fox Kahn. He spells it C-A-H-N, and if you say it fast, you might think he's an heir to that Chinese sweatshop fortune that makes my iPhone. But he is the director of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project at the Urban Justice Center in New York. He is a Brandeis graduate with a Harvard Law degree, and he's been fighting to protect our Fourth Amendment for some time now. Albert, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter.
Tell me a little bit about what has drawn you to this part of the legal profession. You could be pulling down seven figures at a Tony Wall Street firm, perhaps.
Well, I'm not sure about seven figures, but for me, as someone who has a background in computer science and technology and civil rights law, this area, the growing power of the surveillance state, it's one of the most terrifying developments in our legal system of the last 20-30 years, and I as sort of something that's brought us to an inflection point where we really have to decide which way our society will go. Will we allow the growth of perpetual surveillance, or will we actually push back to create safeguards and to create privacy protections? And that's the sort of work we're doing every day at the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project.
And Albert, at the risk of identifying myself as a geezer here, I was covering COINTELPRO in the 1970s.
Mm.
I covered the case of Fred Hampton, the Black Panther, who was set up for a Chicago police raid by the FBI in what many people regard as a state-sponsored murder. And so I've been a critic of the FBI and of many of the practices of domestic law enforcement since that time. And it really troubled me after 9/11 when we saw them reach for the shelves on Capitol Hill and cobble together the Patriot Act. And it was rammed through the Congress with zero debate and almost no opposition. And it has led to a muscular expansion of what I consider to be police state operations in this country. So when I read your piece, and first of all, the only place I have seen this covered is in the analytical piece, the opinion piece that you wrote for the Daily Beast. Has it been picked up by any other media outlet to your knowledge?
Yeah, and I have to credit George Joseph at WNYC, a public radio station here in New York, for bringing the issue to my attention. And, you know, he reported it on it for his station. But there really hasn't been the sort of broad-based opposition we'd hope for to a program that poses a sort of novel privacy risk that we see with reverse surveillance, reverse search warrants.
So before I ask you to describe the details of the use of this remarkable reverse search warrant or the creation of a geofence, as it's described, would you indulge me for a moment while I read verbatim the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution? The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, I want people to understand, because there's no ambiguous language in the Fourth Amendment. You can argue about the language of the Second Amendment, but the Fourth Amendment is very clear. And what you're about to describe here, I think, violates it in several key ways. So please, Albert, tell our listeners what the Manhattan DA did to try to identify the members of Antifa who got in a street fight with the Proud Boys.
Yeah, and I think that language is really a great place to start, because it reminds us that the reason we have a Fourth Amendment is because at the founding of this country, we had general warrants that allowed British law enforcement to go into any home, search any place, take any papers, seize anything they wanted. And that's why we have this in the Fourth Amendment as one of the most fundamental safeguards against the power of the state. Mm-hmm. But with this attack on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, where a number of Antifa members were attacked by the Proud Boys, as part of the case targeting the Proud Boys, the prosecutor here in Manhattan decided to use a reverse search warrant to target members of Antifa because they couldn't find the victims of the attack. And so keep that in mind. This is a tool that we're using to find the victims of a crime. Hmm. And what they did is they said to Google, we want to know every Google device user who had a phone in certain parts of the Upper East Side at certain times. And rather than doing what we normally do with a search warrant, where we say, this is the person, I want their information, they reversed it. And they put it on Google to provide the identities of the people who are in that neighborhood.
Now, that is stunning. And you underscore that they were looking for the victims here, and perhaps, you know, they wanted to unhood the Antifa members, and those people might be at risk for further investigation and prosecution. So it's a very slippery slope. But the idea that you can demand that a commercial enterprise disclose its users in a certain geographical area, doesn't that violate the presumption of innocence? And doesn't it violate the fundamentals of the Fourth Amendment, that no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause. How can you claim probable cause to find victims and rope in a dragnet nature, thousands of innocent, uninvolved people who just happen to be co-located geographically?
Well, I think the key term in the Fourth Amendment for me and thinking about all of this is particularly. The Fourth Amendment requires that we particularly describe the place, the persons we will arrest, the places we will search, mm-hmm. the things that we will seize. Mm-hmm. And you cannot have that sort of particularity when you are defining the scope of the search, not by the individuals being targeted, but by a large neighborhood over an extended period of time. But one of the troubling things about the Upper East Side reverse search warrant is we don't know how large a portion of the Upper East Side was searched. We don't know the scope of that geofence, and we don't know how long the time period was. And so you can easily see a situation where these tools are used to target hundreds or even thousands of individuals at a time. And here we just don't know how many fell potentially into that net.
Mm-hmm. And Albert, this, as I mentioned, in my view, is kind of a legal parallel to the Stingray surveillance system. And I'll thumbnail that for first-time listeners, but I've been on a five-year crusade to expose the use of Stingray and to get them to stop it. But Stingray is a box developed by the Harris Corporation in Florida. It was initially deployed by the FBI, and then they enabled local law enforcement agencies to buy Stingray devices with non-disclosure agreements that prevented them from telling a judge or a suspect in a case that Stingray had been used to try to identify their location or even more invasive kinds of search. Now, Stingray sets up a phony cell phone tower. It's the size of a briefcase, and within a radius of 5 or 10 miles, it basically tricks every phone that is turned on to check in with this fake tower. And if you check in order to make a call, the fake cell phone box will feed you to Verizon or AT&T or whatever carrier you use, and you'll be none the wiser. But they can track your location. They can get the serial number off your phone. In some cases, they're able to access the data that you collect in your phone, your call records, your voicemail. This, to me, is a direct violation of, again, several aspects of the Fourth Amendment. And there's been little objection. You know, the civil liberties crowd in the Democratic Party has not taken this on as a major issue or an area of criticism or reform. And it continues to be used now. It's part of the new normal, and it's no longer remarkable when Stingray is used as a dragnet device to, try to find a single suspect or a handful of suspects by screening thousands, if not tens of thousands, of innocent individuals. Tell me your comment on the comparison between Stingray and these reverse search warrants.
Oh, I also believe that Stingrays are very parallel to what we are seeing with reverse search warrants, in that it's, targeting a large number of people in a geographically defined area and almost inevitably bringing in information on innocent third parties who just happen to be standing nearby the target of that search. And here in New York, I've been working on legislation to actually bring in the use of stingrays or ISMI catchers, as they're also known, mm-hmm. to actually create privacy safeguards and protections for third parties using a bill called the POST Act, the Public Oversight of Surveillance Technology Act, which is one of a growing number of local and state ordinances all across the country that are pushing back on the growing use of these sorts of surveillance tools by state and local law enforcement. Because while we've had the same fight over and over again since, I was in high school about, the Patriot Act and Section 215 and all of these different federal bills, at the very same time, we've seen a lot of state and local police departments growing their arsenal of military-grade spy tools without any real pushback in a lot of jurisdictions. And so I completely agree that there's no basis for using a stingray without a warrant. That is completely unconstitutional. Several courts have even held that. And we need to go even further and have clear privacy protections against the use of those tools going forward.
Now, Albert, at least publicly, Apple has made a big stand for user privacy. And, you know, in their battle with former FBI Director Comey over his demand that they hack the phone that allegedly was used by a shooter in San Bernardino, led to a lengthy struggle that didn't really produce any kind of a legal precedent because the FBI paid $1 million to get a lab to hack the phone. Nothing was found on it. And so that episode kind of went away. In to your knowledge, did Google put up any kind of a legal fight to the validity of the reverse search warrant supplied by the Manhattan District Attorney?
I don't know if they challenged the reverse search warrant in this case. I do know that they have dozens, perhaps even hundreds of similar requests in recent years. And while Google has historically fought a portion of those requests in court, it hasn't, you know, it's not, they aren't really in a position to tell us the details of those fights in most cases. But I do think it is important to note that at a moment when there are a number of technology companies that are taking steps to enable government surveillance, such as Palantir and similar firms, we do see that there are other firms that are actually taking a privacy protective stance like Apple has and fighting against being co-opted into a tool of government surveillance, whether it be through providing tools to hack into phones and computers or providing an encryption backdoor, as the Attorney General recently went on record to demand.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your article, you note that there is a prior case in Arizona involving a man named Jorge Molina, and he was wrongly arrested for a murder. Officers demanded that Google hand over information on every single laptop, phone, tablet, and smart device in a two-block area. And you say that you don't know how many accounts that includes, but it's no surprise that they found a match who turned out to be innocent. So the false positives that surface from facial recognition technology that I'm glad to say San Francisco and Berkeley have banned law enforcement agencies from using, at least for now. But we see that there's a whole area, gray area of law, that law enforcement is kind of aggressively capturing. And we haven't seen any response from legislators to try to develop rules for the use of Stingray, for the use of a reverse search warrant. And so the technology companies, I believe, are often in league with law enforcement in carving out these kind of undefined areas under the law and using them. The other case I would cite is the so-called Golden State Killer, who was found through some law enforcement techniques that skirted the law in using, you know, public DNA databases to create a match and locate their suspect. So these areas of law have not kept up with the development of technology and the deployment of it. And I think that's an area of grave concern.
Well, I do think that there is a response on the ground. It's not as large as I would hope. It's not as advanced as I would hope. But we see these movements time and again in cities big and back against the, you know, growth of the Orwellian surveillance state. And, you know, my partners at the ACLU, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, have for years been working on something called CCOPS, Civilian Control of Police Surveillance. And that is a national movement to enact the sort of bills that we've seen in San Francisco and to not only ban particularly invasive forms of surveillance like facial recognition, but to make it incredibly clear that it is the elected officials and civilians who should control how these tools are being used, not the police officers. Because when we leave it to the police departments themselves to decide the line between privacy and so-called security, it is fundamentally corrosive to the nature of a democratic society and an open society. And so I am grateful to see that. And I completely agree that there are certain companies, such as some of the DNA databases, that have taken steps to further the surveillance state. And I find that appalling. I think no one should be tricked under terms of services to transform their, you know, personal genetic test into part of a genetic dragnet. And so that sort of conduct to me is reprehensible and it should be illegal. But I don't think I disagree that all tech companies have taken the same approach. I think many have been part of the fight to push back against this sort of surveillance, just as some have been fighting the other way.
Mm-hmm. And has there been any test on appeal of the use of a reverse search warrant? I mean, it just seems on the face of it to flagrantly violate the Fourth Amendment.
I haven't found a good example of the technology being challenged at the appellate level. I do think it is part of a large pool of surveillance tools that we will have to litigate in the coming years. So as you may know, there is recently a Supreme Court decision last June called Carpenter, which threw out the government's use of warrantless location tracking via satellite location information. That's sort of the information they get from our phones simply being connected to the cellular network.
Mm-hmm.
And that precedent to me shows that the Supreme Court, even the John Roberts Supreme Court, not the most progressive court, that even this Supreme Court recognizes the dangers that come with a law enforcement community that's empowered by the ability to track anyone at any time for any reason.
Well, and the other somewhat anomalous ruling of the Roberts Court related to the secret placement of GPS trackers on suspects' cars without warrant or notice to the party.
The unfortunate thing about that decision is they actually decided it on a very narrow ground. They had the ability to say it was unconstitutional to track someone without a warrant because of how invasive it was to our privacy. But in that decision, they instead said that it was the act of attaching the tracker, that physical trespass, that was what made it unconstitutional. And to me, that simply kicks the can down the road, because there are all these forms of tracking, whether it be facial recognition or automated license plate readers or vehicle silhouette detection, that can effectively have the same tracking system without ever touching our vehicle. And I think that's what they're going to have to come to terms with in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. Albert, what else would you like to add about this reverse search warrant case and the related issues that I have not asked you about?
Well, I would just like to shamelessly plug my organization.
Well, I was going to let you do that next. But
spine.org.
Go ahead.
No. Well, I just because there are 10 bills we're working on at the state and local level here in New York, all of which I think address similar issues. We're mm-hmm. working on an effort to ban the use of police drones. We're working on a ban on facial recognition in school. We're working on effort to eliminate GPS tracking in the for-profit bail system. Mm-hmm. And I think there's really just a broad variety of measures that are trying to tackle the forms of the surveillance state that are such a clearly objectionable abuse of authority that we can gain a bipartisan consensus and push forward. Because I think this is one of those rare issues where people are coming together across the aisle because they're simply shocked by how bad the whole surveillance system has become, mm-hmm. how powerful it's become, and how few safeguards there are.
Yeah. And what is that website, please, Albert?
Yeah, it's Stop Spying, StopSpying.org.
StopSpying.org. Great. Well, I'm going to add that to my daily review of websites that I look at to pick up fresh information. And I want to invite my listeners to visit your site. And I assume you're a nonprofit and you wouldn't object if they wanted to contribute to supporting your work.
That would be tremendous. We are a small grassroots organization, and you know, anything people can give will go a long way in helping us push back against reverse search warrants and all the other sorts of surveillance tools we've discussed.
Well, and Albert, as we wrap up here, I just want to suggest to you and to our listeners that just on a personal and daily basis, we let people know how important the Fourth Amendment is and how deeply it is under assault and how many incursions have been made on it in the last almost 20 years. And one of the things that I've taken to doing, because I know some members of Congress and I interview them from time to time, and I'll just use this as an example. I saw Nancy Pelosi a couple of years ago at a memorial service for a mutual friend, and we had a nice little talk and caught up on a few things. And as I was getting ready to say goodbye to her, I said, Nancy, I know you're very busy and there are a lot of things on your agenda, but I'd like my Fourth Amendment back. And she kind of pushed back, you know, leaned back for a minute and kind of absorbed it to figure out what the hell I meant. And then she said, oh, Peter, it's so good to see you. The message was received, and she just didn't quite know how to respond to it. And so I encourage you to do that with your elected leaders, because I think they operate inside a bubble where they don't think the public cares about this. And they think that with the fear that's been injected and that's hyped in the news media, that people prefer to be spied upon than to risk, you know, some sort of violent or terrorist event that they imagine could happen at any moment. And I think we need to maintain our focus on what I believe is our contract with our government. And the Fourth Amendment in the Bill of Rights, to me, is one of the most significant, Albert.
I couldn't agree more. It's really, it without that protection, all the others fade. And really grateful to hear that you're keeping that campaign alive and well out on the West Coast.
Albert Foxconn, Executive Director of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project at the Urban Justin Center in New York. Thank you, Albert.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this in-depth conversation with Albert Foxconn. Send your comments to Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.